Hey, all Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. All right, y'all, Scott Horton Show. I'm him. The website is scotthorton.org. I got more than 4,000 interviews there going back to 2003. Sign up for the podcast feed and all that for the interviews at scotthorton.org. Follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Introducing Joe Loria, UN Joe, United Nations correspondent, most of the time anyway, has written for many important newspapers, including the Wall Street Journal, and writes regularly at consortiumnews.com. This one is at the Huffington Post. It's called, Is an Independent Europe Possible? Welcome back to the show, Joe. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much, from Amman, Jordan.
Ah, in Jordan. I was going to ask, are you still in Kurdistan? But there you go.
I just left 2 days ago. I'm here in Jordan now.
Oh, okay. Well, so at the end of our conversation, we'll get back and talk about Iraq, too. Because I love hearing you talk about Iraq. I'm making a note. Okay. So, listen, you wrote this important thing, man. You often do that. It's kind of a thing of yours. Is an independent Europe possible? And you start out here with the statement of the German, is it foreign minister or defense minister, complaining about the USA here?
Foreign minister.
All right, go ahead. What happened?
Yeah, well, the foreign minister made this extraordinary statement in the middle of June. It was actually June 20th, to the Bildungsanstalt newspaper. Just as NATO was conducting a 31,000-man military exercise on the Polish, on the Russian border in Poland, an exercise that saw German troops as part of NATO retracing their steps that they took in 1941 when they invaded the Soviet Union. First time German troops had ever gone on that same road in the same direction. And he said something pretty extraordinary because it calls into question years of messages we've gotten repeatedly from American and other Western officials transmitted through a very cooperative media that Russia is a stupendous threat to the West and that everything has to be done to fortify NATO against them and Russia has to be stopped. Of course, we saw in Ukraine the narrative that they have is that Russia has invaded Ukraine when in fact it was a U.S.-backed coup against a constitutionally elected government in an election certified by the OECD, and the people in eastern Ukraine did not recognize the coup government because they voted largely for Yanukovych, Viktor Yanukovych, who was overthrown, and Russia, and they rebelled, and Russia has helped them with arms, with money, with intelligence, and volunteer fighters, but there's been no massive invasion of Ukraine. And but even if there were, it follows that it was a reaction to the coup d'etat. It was not some willy-nilly aggressive move, the Hitler, as Hillary Clinton has called Putin, who just, you know, has these expansionist dreams and just decided to invade a country, and that he's after Poland and he's after Lithuania, et cetera, et cetera. So what did Steinmeier say? He said, I'm trying to get the exact quote here. He said, it is not the aim of NATO to create a military that's General Pavel. I'm getting to that. He said, this is Steinmeier. What we shouldn't do now is inflame the situation with Russia further through saber-rattling and warmongering. One translation in German was war cries. Whoever believes that a symbolic tank parade on the alliance's eastern border will bring security is mistaken. He went on to say that we're well advised to not create pretext to renew an old confrontation. He said it would be fatal to search only for military solutions and a policy of deterrence with Russia. Now, to compound that, the very next day, General Peter Pavel, he's the chairman of NATO's military committee, an active serving NATO general from the Czech Republic, he dropped another bombshell. He told a press conference in Brussels that Russia was not a threat to the West. His exact words. It is not the aim of NATO to create a military barrier against broad-scale Russian aggression, because such aggression is not on the agenda and no intelligence assessment suggests such a thing. So I'm asking, what happened to the Russian aggression and the Russian threat? What is this all about? Why was this said? Well, did these two men, and these are, this is a foreign minister of the most powerful nation in Europe, Germany, and the head of the NATO military committee, on the record, making these extraordinary statements saying Russia is not a threat, there is no intelligence assessment of any planned Russian aggression. Why are they saying that? Are they afraid that Washington's being run by reckless and delusional leaders who could drag Europe into a disastrous war with Russia? That, we all know what that could imply. Now, I point out in the article that this is very rare because it really makes a lie out of this repeated propaganda, and we have to call it that, that Russia is this threat. And I pointed out that in a background briefing that I attended at the UN, in a UN mission a couple of years ago, with a senior European ambassador, he said that there was no Russian threat to Poland, to Eastern Europe. It was all hype to give a reason for NATO to exist. And I included that to show that in private, they're saying these things, even in a private meeting with reporters that we couldn't quote it. But now they're saying it on the record because things have gotten out of hand. And I point out also that this is the modus operandi of the United States, which is when they identify an opponent, they will accuse them and provoke them. And when that opponent stands up for themselves, as Putin's Russia has done, then the U.S. accuses them of aggression, and then they attack in self-defense when the whole thing was initiated by. And I have a very wonderful quote from Mark Twain here, who actually, you know, it says exactly what I just said. And I've written that before I found this quote. So. He's saying that, you know, that the U.S. Diplomats make up cheap lies about the country that's to be attacked. And the American people are told, don't worry about it. We have to protect it from this threat. And everybody sleeps well knowing this. And after this grotesque self-deception is what he says. So I found it's very difficult to argue with people who are convinced Russia is this threat and why, because they've been told over and over again that they are through mainstream media. And therefore, that they attacked Georgia in 2008 when the European Union itself had a report which said that it was Georgia's fault, and that they invaded Ukraine, which there's no evidence that they did, and it was after a coup d'etat backed by the U.S. anyway. So, and now this nonsense about Russia having designs on Eastern Europe. If you look historically, even Harry Truman in his memoirs says that this anti-communist and anti-Russian hysteria in the 50s was the shame and tragedy of our times. He said, waited till his memoirs to say that. Even George Kennan, the greatest American diplomat in terms of understanding Russia, probably in history, at the time in 1447, in his famous X Factor article in the X article in Foreign Affairs, said that Russia could be contained non militarily, that their activities in Eastern Europe were defensive in nature. They really didn't constitute a threat to Europe. So we've known that long. And he also, before he died in the 90s, said that NATO's expansion eastward towards Russian borders was a mistake. So the piece that I wrote is trying to lay out the fact that Americans have to understand that why this propaganda about Russian threat is being made, because they are targeting Russia. I visited Russia in 1995, November, and I was the days of Boris Yeltsin and Jeffrey Sachs. The alliance between Wall Street and oligarchs to loot the country and to, in the process, make destitute millions of Russians, many of whom I saw homeless, encamped in front of train stations, burning fires at night, motorists being stopped by policemen for bribes. Two guys tried to rob me, and I ran into a metro station to get away from it. It was total chaos. Now, here's Putin, who has changed in 20 years, actually 20 years to the month. I went back last November in 2015, and I saw a completely different country, a prosperous, orderly European city. And this is what Putin has done. He stood up to the U.S. and kicked those guys out. And this is what Washington, the knaves and the buccaneers on Wall Street want to see again in Russia. They want to go back and plunder the country again. And Putin is standing in their way. So how does the United States move in? How do they get rid of Putin? This is the ultimate aim, to overthrow that government. How do they restore a leader like Yeltsin, who will open the country up again for Western exploitation? They have to get rid of Putin. So they're building this narrative that Russia is the threat, and we have to protect ourselves by putting aggressive NATO forces on the border, by overthrowing Ukraine. As we all know, Brzezinski said, if Russia loses Ukraine, they cease to be a Eurasian power, in his famous book, The Grand Chessboard. So this is all a strategy to get rid of Putin and to get Russia back to the way it was, so that West and Wall Street can steal again from this country. And here is Steinmeier and Pavel the general of NATO and the foreign minister of Germany saying it's nonsense. It's not true. I mean, it's extraordinary. And it wasn't published. Of course it wasn't published in Western media and American corporate press. The New York Times ignored Steinmeier's remarks. 2 days later, they ran a Reuters story, only a Reuters story online, not in the print edition, which simply said the U.S. military, and they quoted some Navy official, I don't know why the Navy, saying that it was ridiculous what Steinmeier said. They were appalled. So the Americans were very upset with what Steinmeier said. But if you didn't see this little Reuters story online in the New York Times, which I only found by doing a search for the New York Times archives to see what they'd done, you wouldn't even know about this remark by Steinmeier. And many Americans, well-educated and plugged in American culture, did not know about this remark from Steinmeier, and they only knew about it when they read my article. And why is that? Because the media is complicit with this plan, because it's owned by big corporations who will also could benefit from American expansion and going back to take back Russia, which they had under Yeltsin.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now... Well, I guess this goes right to the heart of Victoria's F the EU and even Rumsfeld's complaints about old Europe and how, hey, new Europe is in the East and all we got to do is keep Germany nice and surrounded with new and more compliant, more dependent NATO allies and to keep America in Europe and to keep, well, whatever the Germans' opinion is, pro or con, out of the way.
Yes, it dovetails into the Brexit vote and the calls for new referenda to get out of EU. David Cameron, one of his scare tactics was to tell voters before referendum that it will be harder if we leave the EU to combat Russian aggression. There it is again, Russian aggression, Russian threat. They didn't buy that story. I'm not saying that's why they voted to leave EU, but that didn't work. And we have in German, a lot of public opinion polls show that the public does not want even the U.S. necessarily to stay in Germany 70 years after the war, 25 years after the Cold War. Why is the U.S. troops still based in Germany? I asked Germans when I went to Berlin in November when I came out from Russia, when I flew from St. Petersburg, and they all said, well, Russia, who's the threat? Russia. But there's no evidence for this. So there is a lot of Germans who don't see Russia as the threat and maybe see the U.S. as threatening to engulf Germany and all of Europe into a devastating war. And I think Steinmeier was playing to that. He's a social democrat. He's a social democratic voters mostly, and Greens who have this view. But he said it. And of course, it's interesting to note that Angela Merkel did not discipline him, but she did say 3 days later at a press conference that she wanted more German spending for NATO to counter Russian threats. So Merkel is completely pro-American. I don't understand how she's been elected to put together three coalition governments. But despite the opinion polls that say that they don't agree with this Russian threat narrative, but there's what you have. And the European people are getting restless with a European Union that's completely run by neoliberal technocrats. The idea of unity of Europe was a good thing when it was first hatched to some extent, but it has been taken over by this neoliberal elite, and they don't give a damn about average workers and average people around Europe. And this is what the rebellion is about, and they don't want necessarily Europe to be driven into a war with Russia.
Yeah. It's funny that they call it neoliberalism. It should just be called what it is. Conservatism. Welfare for the rich and screw everybody else, man. That's the American system since the days of Henry Clay. I don't know what's so liberal about it. But anyway, hey, man, so there's so much to talk about here, Joe, that you've mentioned now that I need to go back over. But one of the things I got to ask is, did you see the story about General Breedlove and his email hack?
Yes. Yes.
We talked with Zay Jelani on the show about this. Now, this is the former U.S. Air Force general who was the supreme allied commander of NATO during the entire coup and aftermath of the coup in Ukraine. And apparently, he was going to great lengths to try to at least solicit advice from the likes of Colin Powell and Wesley Clark and other very powerful people to try to figure out how to end run Barack Obama and figure out a way to escalate the war in Ukraine, including even trying to work some kind of arms deal to get the Pakistanis to ship surface-to-air or, you know, shoulder-fired surface-to-air missiles over there.
Yeah, breed hate. Strange love, breed love. I mean, this guy is a perfect example of what's wrong here. He's a complete ideologue. I don't know what drives him, whether he's deluded or whether he just wants power and to, again, have the West control Russia. But a good thing he's not in charge of NATO anymore, but it doesn't really matter too much. But this is really something. You know, this guy writing these emails and going to Colin Powell and trying to convince the White House. And you know what? If Hillary Clinton is elected, I don't think that he's going to, whoever is in charge of NATO will have to convince her because she is so aggressive towards Russia.
That's exactly what I thought when I was reading that was, man, can you imagine if it had been Hillary instead of Obama sitting there in the chair? She would have been saying, oh, Mr. General Breedlove, pay attention to me. Don't you approve of what I want you to do? Yeah, go ahead. Because that's her entire thing is just sucking up to everybody around her like that.
Yeah, look, Obama has been a disaster in many of his foreign policies, but he did put a brake on a few things, like intervention, direct intervention, after that chemical weapons attack in Syria.
The whole thing in Ukraine can be pinned on him. It's his administration, but at least he didn't go as far as, let's really have a war.
Exactly, but he went too far, in my view, but he didn't go far enough for those people, which is good, because he put a brake. Whereas when he's out of the scene now, and he said famously in that Atlantic interview that he was pissed off at the foreign policy establishment in Washington because of the pressure they put on him. And they won't have to put any pressure on Hillary Clinton. This is why I'm so worried about a Clinton presidency. And I think people around the world are as well. And I'm outside the U.S. here, and I can tell you that they focus on Trump. They don't always get what Clinton is. But some people do understand that Clinton is a disaster waiting, a really serious disaster waiting to happen in her aggressive foreign policy. And Ukraine is one that could be stirred up again by her and probably will be.
Yeah. All right. Now, so let's talk about how crazy it is to even talk about regime change in Russia, because, you know, I already know you're right and everything, but you still sound crazy to me when you say it because of the information that everybody has accessible right there in their brain. Hey, Russia, they might not be a superpower, but they're a nuclear weapons superpower, at least as far as that goes, and that means they're as independent from us as they want to be. And how could anyone with power in America really contemplate some kind of, well, you know, like what we saw in Ukraine, some kind of coup or some kind of regime change in Russia to overthrow Putin? I mean, maybe they got lucky when some dice rolled and they ended up with Yeltsin, who was weak enough to be pliable to the West, but strong enough to keep his competitors out and down for so many years inside Russia. But how do they really imagine that they could get away with that again? I mean, isn't there at some point they have to just shrug and recognize that, you know, until Putin grows old or something, Russia's going to be independent from us for at least another little while. And, Joe, wouldn't they be at least slightly afraid that whoever comes after Putin might be a lot worse than him instead of easier?
Well, there's what the Russian, which is called the fifth column inside the Russian government, particularly in the economic sphere. There are liberals, as they call them. There's that word again, which has a thousand meanings. But in Russia, that means a liberal means someone who it trends towards the West and likes the U.S. and doesn't agree with Putin on a lot of his foreign policy issues. And there amongst those people, the U.S. has contacts. And they tried with NGOs, as we've seen, NGOs have been a great tool of the U.S. when fomenting unrest to try to overthrow governments. And that's why Putin's kicked out a lot of American NGOs, because he's not stupid. He knows what they're trying to do. I mean, obviously, anybody with half a brain in the Pentagon or in the White House or in the State Department would know you don't want to start, a war by invading Russia. Although they're doing a damn bit to try to provoke one. But they would want to overthrow him and put in one of these liberals, so-called pro-Western liberals, so that they can open up the country again to Western exploitation and go back to the Yeltsin days. So it's a long-term project. But if you listen to people like Victoria Nuland, who said screw the EU because they weren't so excited about the overthrow of Yanukovych in Ukraine, but she said to hell with them. That just shows you that quote, which I didn't even bother using in this article, just shows you how much power the U.S. has over Europe. And I started the article by saying there was a crack in the wall of this disciplined obedience of Europe towards the United States with these remarks by Steinmeier and the Czech general. Because until at this very moment now, the European Union has been a U.S. project from the very beginning. We know now that Alan Dulles was involved and the CIA had a role in creating the precursors of what became the European Union. And so they answered to the United States.
Yeah.
And an interesting point somebody raised after my piece came out, that in Germany, the industrialists are against sanctions against, European sanctions against Russia over Ukraine, because they do trade with Russia. They're losing lots of money. They don't want any, you know, anything to do with that. But the finance part of the German economy wants this because they are back, they want Wall Street. They are part of the whole Wall Street gang that wants back in. They're not making that kind of money that they did before under Yeltsin. So that's an interesting tension inside German society right there.
Did they have a party divide, the financiers versus the industrialists there in Germany, or they're all stuck with the conservatives or whatever it is?
I think within the conservative party, you've got both people from the financial sector and industrialists who support her, but they don't support her sanctions because they're being hurt by that.
Right. And, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I do know there are certain members of the left party, some social democrats, who are against the sanctions against Germany, but there aren't enough in the Bundestag to overturn this at the moment. There are even some people on the far left in Germany who want Americans' bases, you know, ended in Germany. Because Germany, U.S. launches many of its wars in the Middle East from bases in Germany. It's another reason why they want them out. So, but right now she does have a stranglehold, and she's able to, you know, keep this pro-American policy that Steinmeier completely undermined. He's from another party because they have a coalition.
Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, to American ears, people who aren't very familiar with all these issues, it should be shocking just on the face of it that the German foreign minister and a German member of, as you put it, I'm sorry, the chair of the NATO military committee. I mean, here's a guy who has a vested interest in finding things for NATO to do. And he's saying, this is crazy. We have to stop it. We need to take that seriously. That's not nothing. And I wanted to go back to what you reported before, as you say here. And, of course, you know, again, a longtime Wall Street Journal reporter and, you know, plenty of credentials as a longtime journalist stationed especially at the United Nations. And you report here that 2 years ago, a senior European ambassador – at his country's UN mission in New York, you mentioned this earlier, that he admitted to you, basically, or at least said to the room in this background briefing, that all of this stuff about Russia's aggressive threat to Eastern Europe was, quote, all hype. That's what he told you, and it was to give NATO a reason to exist. Can you please tell us more about that in any way?
Well, I was shocked when he said it, and he didn't follow up on it. And but why did he say this? And the funny thing about the guy is that when he would go into the Security Council, this was at the time of the Ukrainian crisis when it was just beginning, and there were several very, very contentious meetings inside public Security Council meetings where the Russian ambassador, Vitaly Churkin, and the Ukrainian ambassador were really going at each other, and Churkin and some at the power were really going at each other. And in these public meetings, this same ambassador said that in private, but it viciously attacked Russia. So what I was trying to point out here is that this is what they privately understand. That this is hype. But the one publicly, they come out and say Russia is the threat, it's aggression, we've got to stand up to them and we have to be prepared, you know, even to attack if necessary, if they get out of hand. Whereas here's Steinmeier, the foreign minister of Germany and the NATO military commander, committee head, coming out and saying this. And I question why. Why did they say this now? And I could only think that it's because they think that the U.S. is getting out of hand.
Right, yeah, they're really worried.
And reckless, yes.
Right, there's no other explanation for it. Yeah, no, they're sticking their neck way out. I mean, politically speaking, this might be the very end of their careers for both of them. You know?
And the American people don't know about it because the subservient corporate media did not report this. It was news in Germany. It was certainly news in Russia. But it was not news in the United States.
Hey, Joe. Let me ask you this, man, and I guess it sounds crazy, but it would be, I think, less crazy than the actual situation. I don't know, but do you think that maybe ever the Americans kind of whisper in a little side room to their Russian counterparts that, you know, we're just playing, right? And brinksmanship is good for some of our, you know, political cronies' bottom lines, but we don't really mean you no harm, so just play along. Something like that.
I wish that were true, but I don't believe that, no.
God help.
I mean, look, I don't know. There are all kinds of people working in diplomacy in the U.S. with contacts with Russia. And maybe in a private conversation, there are people who understand what Steinmeier does and may say those kinds of things. I don't think Kerry would say that to them. I don't know. But no, I don't think so.
That's just my imagination. That's just me being hopeful about the way I wish it was, at least. You know?
It's not just about the military.
It's a put-on, right? Brinksmanship. It's a money-making thing if you're a particular kind of crony. That's all.
It's a money-making thing in the short term only for the military industry, etc. It doesn't help Wall Street because Russia's been blocked off for a great deal. And now sanctions prevent a lot of economic activity as well.
Right.
But they want to get back Russia. And this has been a long-standing look at the history. There have been three invasions of Russia by the West. First by Napoleon in 1812, then by the Americans, British, and French in 1918 during the Russian Civil War, not a fact well known, and then, of course, Nazis in 1941. And never has the reverse been true, except for a short, incursion of East Prussia at the outbreak of World War One after Prussia declared war on Russia. Then the Russians attacked. But there's never been a reversal of that. In other words, Russia has never attacked the West. So what is this all based on? It is the strategy to allow an attack on Russia, to undermine Russia by continuously blaming them as being aggressive and a threat when it's not there. And a guy like Steinmeier, who's not just some, analyst in a think tank, he's a foreign minister of Germany, had enough of it. And he said it during this NATO maneuver on the record.
Right.
And then he was followed up by this Czech general, which, again, shows, I don't think there's any doubt now, although I've talked to a German friend today who I had read the article, and a very smart guy. He's actually the best-selling novelist around the world, and he doesn't agree with me because it's been drummed into him that Russia's a threat. I don't know what to do anymore. I'm kind of blue in the face now, and I thought this was such a godsend from these guys to say this, but I had to write this piece to lay it out.
Right.
So this is, for me, the definitive piece to show that Russia is not a threat and why the U.S. says that it is. It's not that they're just saying it only for economic reasons, but this long-term strategy of gaining control, again, of Russian economy, essentially.
Yeah. Well, I saw on Twitter, it's funny, Neil Postman be rolling over in his grave. But I saw on Twitter a short quote of some profound thinker whose name I can't even remember with his specific definition of propaganda. And it was, along the lines of being such an overwhelming and effective narrative that anything outside of it sounds, strikes a terrible dissonance and sounds like it's the thing that is crazy and outside the line. And that's what makes for real effective propaganda. As soon as you and Joe start saying, hey, guys, there's some nuance here I think you might want to understand, it's like, needle scratch off the record. But Joe, we all know Putin, Hitler, scary, weapons of mass destruction, killing his own people, crazy, can't negotiate with him, whatever it is, babies in incubators. We're already upset. We're already on board. And so something's wrong with you, pal. That's
exactly
what we're dealing with here.
Exactly the situation. And I can tell you, in dealings with editors of corporate newspapers, and I've worked for a few, that screeching sound you just described is what I heard. They didn't want to hear it. It didn't fit into what they believe, what they understand, what they felt. And I was just, dismissed as irrelevant or a kook. And you're right. Here's, again, evidence, and it doesn't have any effect because, first of all, in this case, because of the people who said it, it couldn't be printed in the U.S. media, except this rebuttal from the U.S. They didn't write the original story. They wrote, the Times did a rebuttal, and it was only a Reuters story. It wasn't even a Times staff-written story, and it was only online. So they do that to sort of cover their ass, basically. Say, oh, yeah, we covered that story. No, you didn't cover that story. This is what should have been on the front page, these two statements. And it would start a national discussion about our relations with Russia and what are Russia's true intentions and what's really going on here, the one that we're having here on your radio station, but it should be across the country if we have a democracy in America where we actually discuss these issues. But, of course, we know we don't.
Right.
And these things are not discussed.
Well, and especially when – you know, just on the very face of it, you have things like Chuck Hagel, the former Republican senator and former Secretary of Defense, admittedly under a Democrat, but still. And he is now part of the Committee for East-West Accord. And let's have, you know, dialogue and understanding and figure out how to get along with the Russians. So does that mean that he's some kind of communist sympathizer or something? Or does that mean that, hey, maybe he actually has a cool head on this and thinks that it's important that cooler heads prevail? And how come the rest of the adults in this country can't take that kind of attitude on board here? We're talking about the most important issue on the planet. America's relationship with Russia, period. There's nothing that compares to that.
When you factor nuclear weapons in? Absolutely.
Exactly.
Now, my question
I mean, if Britain
is,
and France go to nuclear war, that's not going to kill all of mankind. But if America and Russia do, billions of people will die. Billions.
And my question to you is, why is Chuck Hagel no longer the defense secretary of the United States?
Because he didn't want to get rid of Assad. Or he couldn't figure out whether his orders were to get rid of Assad or not. It was probably more likely.
And maybe he wasn't bellicose enough against Russia.
Yeah.
So who was Obama put in there? This absolute neocon fanatic, Ashton Carter, who's actually one of the worst, scariest guys to lead the Pentagon in a long time. Even in some ways scarier than Rumsfeld. I mean, it's just extraordinary. So, yeah, Hagel is going to be, you know, this is where the system, the elite could say, look, we have a free speech in this country. Chuck Hagel has this committee. Does anybody write about it? Do they mention it?
Nope. Yeah, no one's ever heard of it.
If long as you're not heard, you have free speech in the United States.
Yeah.
If you start getting heard and they don't like the message, there are ways to silence. And I know my editors would not take stories that I gave them that would question the prevailing narrative that would break through that propaganda that's so successful, as you described very well, so that when some counter information comes in, it's immediately dismissed as insane. And that they are so deluded, they can't see that what they believe borders on insanity. Certainly it's delusional, and it's not true half the time, or they take facts and twist them. So it's an impenetrable wall. I would rather have published this story in Foreign Policy magazine, or God forbid, Foreign Affairs, or in a major media, which I've worked for. But I know this would not get in. Because I have had too many experiences where I tried to get stories that question the official U.S. line. And this was what the media used to do and supposed to do, or at least in our dreams did, which is to question authority, challenge people in government.
And is this why you're out of the Wall Street Journal now, Joe?
Well, I did a few stories there that they weren't happy with. But that wasn't the actual reason. It was just a staff move. They just threw me out. But I think they got really upset with a couple of stories I did. One on Dag Hammarskjöld and whether he was killed. And I implied in a Wall Street Journal story that the CIA may have killed him. And I did that based on a report by the Independent Hammarskjöld Commission, on which Justice Goldstone was a member. So I'm not just making them. I was reporting stuff, facts that don't get in. You know, I don't make it stuff up. And they ran that story. And Russ Baker, you might know Russ Baker. I don't know if you interviewed him. He happened to come by the UN one day, and he had to come to the office to see me because he couldn't believe that the Wall Street Journal ran that story. And then I got other stuff in there. I started pushing an article about this.
Wait. Go back. I plead total ignorance. I don't even know whose murder you're talking about there.
Dag Hammarskjöld, the second Secretary General of the UN. He died in 1961 in a plane crash in Africa.
Oh, the plane crash guy. Yeah. Okay, I'm with you. Mm-hmm.
And a new book out by Susan Williams called Who Killed Hammarskjöld, a wonderful woman, wrote a great book in which she found new information that showed many witnesses saw a second plane shooting in the air behind Hammarskjöld and shooting it down. Many independent witnesses. And these were all dismissed at the time by the Northern Rhodesian authorities who did the main investigation. That was part of Northern Rhodesia at the time, where it happened. And now all this new evidence came out, and this independent commission was set up, and they recommended to Ban Ki-moon that and the General Assembly that they look into it again, and they actually did. They had a resolution, and they called for an independent UN investigation, which is not ruled out that his plane was shot down. And the CIA, amongst the MI6 and others, had reason to get rid of Hammarskjöld. He was a champion of African nationalism at that time. South Africa, apartheid South Africa, wanted him out. The Rhodesians wanted him out. The Brits and the CIA did not necessarily Kennedy, were at odds with him. The Soviets hated him too because they didn't think he was strong enough. He was a very independent Secretary General. I've just written a book proposal for a book on all the Secretary Generals and how independent they were towards the U.S. and in those days towards the Soviet Union. And there's not been anyone more independent than Dag Hammarskjöld. The least independent one is the current Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon. And Dag Hammarskjöld, you know, angered the Americans and the Soviets because he took an independent line in defense of we the peoples, the first words of the U.N. Charter. So anyway, I got that story into the Wall Street Journal, but there were others that I pitched that did not get in. One of them was about this Defense Intelligence Agency document that I know you're aware of, that you've spoken about, that showed that the U.S., Russia, the U.S., Turkey, the Gulf states helped create the Salafist principality in eastern Syria, and that it could link up with extremists in Iraq and create an Islamic State. And that was in August 2012. So it shows the U.S. Complicit with developing the group in Syria to put pressure on Assad that eventually turned into Islamic State. And the document says it could become Islamic State using those very words. That's a huge, major story that has not penetrated major media. And I have an exact example trying to get that into the paper.
Well, in fact, just last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, Donald Trump tweeted out a Breitbart story that was, you know, based on the heading, someone at the State Department may have seen it. So therefore, Hillary Clinton must have read it, they claimed. And so it was a ridiculous red herring, which was easily dismissed. And the Glenn Kessler at the Washington Post did his little Pinocchio thing where he concluded that, that story is such a nothing burger of a story. I don't even know what you're talking about. We talked with Mike Morrell, and he assured us that never mind what the DIA says, the CIA assures us that they only back moderate terrorists and not extreme ones.
Yeah, well, General Mike Flynn, who was the head of the DIA at the time, told Al Jazeera that this was a willful decision in Washington to support these extremists in Syria. And so they were warned. The U.S. was warned that this could turn into something really ugly. And they said it could be called the Islamic State. And now look where we are today. Even Erdogan in Turkey now has had to really turn against ISIS after this bombing in the airport. He sealed the border, or their supplies have been cut off. He's pissed off ISIS. He was supporting them very strongly. And now he's talking about cooperating with Russia to fight ISIS because Erdogan is painting himself in a corner. And the guy's only about his own survival. He has no beliefs. He has no ideology. And he's in trouble now. So he's actually wants to team up with Russia. And there's even a story that he's putting out feelers to Assad in Damascus for a rapprochement between Ankara and Damascus, which he's been committed to overthrowing Assad for years now. So strange things are happening in the Middle East, where I am right now. And you saw, of course, what happened in Baghdad the other day. It's just horrendous. This monster, this Frankenstein that was created partly by the U.S. and its allies. And it has, you know, they have to defeat it now. And it's so ugly and so dangerous. And I wanted to write a story saying, well, the U.S. had a hand in creating it. Now, that would undermine totally this war on terror narrative, wouldn't it? You know, you can't have the American people knowing this. No, that document only was declassified because of a lawsuit against the DIA. They didn't want that out.
Well, and think of how destructive to the narrative Trump could be if he wasn't such a dilettante and he actually wanted to take the time. And hell, he could invite General Flynn right into his office and say, help me actually get this right, please. And he could just completely hammer Hillary Clinton. But well, he's Donald Trump, so he can't help but get at least half wrong, even when he's really going after her on something that he's right about.
Let me ask you this, Scott. Why he made a lot of noises that seemed anti-neocon and got a lot of people interested in that and hopeful even. And then he put advisors around him, many of which seem to be neoconservatives.
Hey, he's a realist, campaign. Man. He wants to be the president. What's he going to do? Take on Israel? You know?
No, I'm not talking about Israel. I'm not talking about Israel. Forget that.
Oh.
Well, he did make that remark about being neutral and he got in trouble with that. But
he said neocons features. And I heard Netanyahu. Sorry.
No, but the neocons are also after Russia, too, what we were talking about.
Right.
And he has said that he would work with Putin. And that gave some hope. And this takes us back to the whole theme of our interview here, that he gave hope to some people that he wouldn't be as aggressive towards Russia as we know Hillary Clinton will be, who's called Putin.
Well, Hitler, I got a couple things about that.
Ohio,
I
mean,
I'd say, first of all, I think, you know, he sort of kind of thinks that, but he doesn't really think much. So, you know, I've seen him say like 6 months ago, back before it was as much of a big deal, that like, Yeah, you can't be enemies with everybody. Yeah, they're the Russians. We got to get along with them, right? I'm like, hey, all right. You know, that's singing my song right there. I like that. But you really think about it, what he's really doing is just differentiating himself from everybody else. Everybody else says one thing, he says the other thing. He also contradicts himself all the time. He called for shooting down Russian planes buzzing our ships over the Baltic Sea when, you know, what would our planes be doing if we had Russian aircraft carriers in the Gulf of Mexico? Give me a break.
It sounds like he says what the first thing off the top of his head.
Yeah,
at that moment.
You know, he's completely unreliable on all of this stuff. And, you know, he's...
And now that Hillary Clinton is freed from, what a surprise, right? FBI, okay. No charges on the email controversy. She's got a cakewalk maybe to the White House.
Yeah. I think our best hope would be that Trump could recognize that it's good politics to be against all this stuff. But, you know, he doesn't. I mean, all this, you know, let's reinvade Iraq and let's torture people to death and kill their family members and all of this kind of stuff. Which is funny because, I mean, he must mean it because from a political point of view, he's got to understand that he doesn't need to pretend to be that tough. Everybody already considers him, you know, overly macho, if anything. He doesn't need to talk about torturing innocent people and all of this stuff. So he must really be committed. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, in fact, that's one reason, because he is so seen as so tough that he could do make an opening to Russia.
Right, yeah, like he could do the whole Nixon to China thing on Iran, on Russia, on whatever he wanted, if he wanted, right?
Exactly, yep. Exactly. And if he does get elected, we have to hope that that's what he will do.
I don't know, man. I'm not too into hoping anything right around now. But listen, thanks again for the great interview. You do great work, and I hope you're back at a major paper here soon, Joe. Oh, and listen, we didn't get to talk about Iraq, but we're already like 45 minutes into this thing, so let's do it again soon. All right, appreciate it. All right, y'all, that's Joe Loria. He was at the Wall Street Journal. Here he is at the Huffington Post. Is an independent Europe possible? And you can also find them oftentimes at consortiumnews.com. That's the Scott Horton Show. Check out the website at scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feed there. More than 4,000 interviews in the archives if you're interested in that. Help support the show at scotthorton.org/donate. If you donate 50, 100, or 200 bucks, we got really great goodies and kickbacks and things like that for you there if you want to help support the show. Especially those of you who are so excited about how I'm trying to write a book with Tom Woods all about the terror war. And so, you know, maybe under the theory of marginal utility, you have more money lying around than you care to know what to do with. You just send it to me, you know, help support the show. ScottHorton.org/donate. And otherwise, just follow me on Twitter and I'll be yelling at you all day over there at twitter.com/ScottHortonShow.
President John F. Kennedy was assassinated more than 50 years ago. Questions still persist to this day. Why did the Secret Service threaten deadly force against the Dallas Medical Examiner? Why did a Navy official testify that the official autopsy photographs were not the ones she developed during the weekend of the assassination? Explore these questions and more in Jacob Hornberger's best-selling ebook, The Kennedy Autopsy, published by the Future of Freedom Foundation. Buy it today for only $2.99 on Amazon.com. The Kennedy Autopsy by Jacob Hornberger.
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.